Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the show, Pete Musto brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close our program with an American story. But first, many Americans have a chance to sleep in a little longer this weekend. In the early hours of Sunday, November 3rd, daylight saving time comes to an end in most of the country. People are supposed to turn their clocks back an hour, so they will have one more hour to rest. But there are exceptions. The time change is not observed in the states of Arizona or Hawaii or United States territories such as Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. Daylight saving time is the tradition of moving the clocks forward 1 hour in March and turning them back again in November. Americans use the expression spring forward, fall back, to remember which way to set their clocks. American Benjamin Franklin first proposed the time change in 1784. He liked the idea of moving clocks forward to take advantage of more sunlight during the summer months. Franklin wrote, "Every morning, as soon as the sun rises, let all the bells in every church be set ringing. And if that is not sufficient, let cannon be fired in every street to wake the sluggards." This led some people to believe that the proposal to move the time forward was just an attempt to make late sleepers get up early. In 1915, Germany and Britain agreed to the time change during World War I to save energy. When the United States entered the war, Congress passed a law in 1918 to adopt daylight saving time. The practice ended in 1920 because American farmers objected, but returned in 1942 after the U.S. entered World War II. After the fighting stopped, American states and towns were given a choice whether to keep daylight saving time. For a time, this led to a free-for-all system, with people never really sure about the timing of bus and train service. Congress passed a law to keep the time uniform across the country. However, several states, including Hawaii and Arizona, kept control of the local time. Some states are trying to decide whether to stay on DST year-round or just end the time change altogether. Florida became the first state to approve a proposal for observing DST year-round, and California soon may follow. Other states, like Texas, are looking to stay in standard time permanently. One of the Americans who wants to end the time change is President Donald Trump. Trump wrote on Twitter earlier this year, "Making daylight saving time permanent is okay with me."
Scientists have found the strongest evidence yet that a virus is to blame for a mysterious illness that can quickly paralyze children. the very rare condition called acute flaccid myelitis, or AFM, is similar to the polio disease. The first reports of the disease came from the American state of California in 2012. Since then, the U.S. has experienced an increasingly bigger outbreak every other year from late summer into autumn. Doctors have long believed that certain viruses known as enteroviruses caused AFM. But they did not have enough evidence to prove it. So researchers tried something new. They checked patients' spinal fluid for signs the immune system had fought an invading virus. Children who got sick had antibodies that target enteroviruses. Dr. Michael Wilson is with the University of California, San Francisco. He helped lead the research. He said the evidence did not prove their idea, but it was a powerful sign enteroviruses cause AFM. His team reported the findings in the publication Nature Medicine. Study co-writer Dr. Riley Bove is with the same university as Wilson. Bove's son developed AFM at age 4. He noted, if you don't have a cause, you can't have a vaccine. Bove added that Wilson developed a good enough microscope, in a sense, to find things they suspected were there. About 590 cases of the illness have been confirmed in the U.S. since 2014. Cases increased that year, in 2016, and in 2018. Only a few were reported in the years in between. So far, there have been 22 cases this year. Bove's son Luca demonstrates the pattern. His whole family caught a cold in the summer of 2014. A few days later, Luca woke up with weakness in his neck that traveled down his shoulder. Within days, he had body-wide paralysis and trouble breathing. He recovered slowly. Today, he still has some paralysis in his neck, shoulder, and arm. Experts believe either a germ or the body's reaction to a germ damages nerves in the spinal cords of patients like Luca. They are preparing for another possible increase of cases next summer. I'm Jonathan Evans.
In South Korea, the most popular movie this week is about the everyday sexism women face there. It is based on the best-selling book called Kim Ji-young, Born 1982. Both the book and movie have people talking about the place of women in South Korea's historically male-dominated society. The film sold $8.3 million in tickets in its first week, says the Korean Film Council. Some of that comes from women who have not even seen the movie. Commenters on social media said they bought tickets as a way to show their support. The action is known in Korea as sending one soul. The new movie and 2016 book are about a married woman in her 30s. She feels forced by her social situation and other people's opinions to surrender her work and dreams. She leaves her job to raise her young child. A book review on the website Dramas Are Okay notes that Kim Ji-young was the most common name for a girl in 1982. The title suggests that the story is about the usual experiences of many girls and women in South Korea. The reviewer said, "The book describes a number of small events in the life of Kim Ji-young. At family meals, she is given her food last. At work, a client makes insulting comments to her, and she feels pressured to accept them. During a holiday, she is expected to help cook and clean with her husband's mother while the men rest. In time, Kim Ji-young begins talking as if she is other people. She loses her own voice." A number of women cried loudly as they watched the movie at a theater in Seoul recently. Xiao Mi-jung was one of them. She is 23 years old. She said, "The movie was realistic." She said, "It touched on realities in South Korean society that keep women of different generations from the life they wanted to lead." Her comment was very different than that of a 29-year-old man who saw the film on opening day. Kim Won-koo said he did not connect emotionally with the idea that a woman born in 1982 faced discrimination growing up. "Many of the situations seem unrealistic or very, very rare," he said. Their answers show the difference of opinions among many women and men in South Korea. Women rated the film an average of 9.5 out of 10 stars on South Korea's top web search page. Men gave it an average of 2.5 stars. The film comes at a time when South Koreans are increasingly debating women's rights and whether men are being treated unfairly. As in other countries, in recent months, a number of well-known male public officials, business leaders, and performers have been accused of sexual harassment and abuse. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
This week, we answer a question from Eddie. Eddie writes, "Hi, VOA Learning English. I want to know how to use any and some. Dear Eddie, it often seems like English speakers use the words any and some in exactly the same way. People use both words to describe an amount of something, but usually not an exact amount. Also, any and some often appear in similar sentences or questions. For example, let us say you are at school and your teacher tells the class to start working on a writing project. Your friend turns to you and asks a question in one of two ways. Do you have any paper? Or, do you have some paper? In both cases, your friend does not have the paper needed to do the work and is asking if you have extra paper they can use. But they are not asking for an exact amount of paper, like one or two or even three pieces. The biggest difference between any and some is that the word you use in your answer depends on the kind of answer you will give. Let us say you bought a lot of paper at the start of the school year, so you do have extra that you can share with your friend. In this case, you will make a positive statement. You say, "Yes, I have some. Here you go." However,
Let us say you already gave the extra paper you once had to other classmates, and you have no more to share. In this case, you will make a negative statement. You say, "No, I do not have any. Sorry." But there is one kind of positive statement you can make using the word any. That is when someone asks you a question and it is not important or easy for you to give an exact answer. For example, let us say your teacher wants you to write about your interests. So he or she asks you, "What is your favorite movie?" You think and think, but cannot think of one you like more than others. So you answer with, "Any movie that has action in it." And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Pete Musto.
Our story today is called Pigs is Pigs. It was written by Ellis Parker Butler. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
Mike Flannery, the agent of the Interurban Express Company, leaned over the desk in the company's office in Westcott and shook his fist. Mr. Morehouse, angry and red, stood on the other side of the desk, shaking with fury. The argument had been long and hot. At last, Mr. Morehouse had become speechless. The cause of the trouble lay on the desk between the two men. It was a box with two guinea pigs inside. "Do as you like, then," shouted Flannery. "Pay for them and take them, or don't pay for them and leave them here. Rules are rules, Mr. Morehouse, and Mike Flannery is not going to break them." "But you stupid idiot," shouted Mr. Morehouse, madly shaking a thin book beneath the agent's nose. "Can't you read it here, in your own book of transportation rates? Pets, domestic, Franklin to Westcott, if correctly boxed, 25 cents each." He threw the book on the desk. "What more do you want? Aren't they pets? Aren't they domestic? Aren't they correctly boxed? What?" He turned and walked back and forth rapidly with a furious look on his face. "Pets," he said. "P-E-T-S. 25 cents each. 2 times 25 is 50. Can you understand that? I offer you 50 cents. Flannery reached for the book. He ran his hand through the pages and stopped at page 64. "I don't take 50 cents, he whispered in an unpleasant voice. "Here's the rule for it. When the agent be in any doubt about which two rates should be charged on a shipment, he shall charge the larger. The person receiving the shipment may put in a claim for the overcharge. In this case, Mr. Morehouse, I be in doubt. Pets them animals may be, and domestic they may be, but pigs I'm sure they do be. And my rule says, plain as the nose on your face, pigs, Franklin to Westcott, 30 cents each." Mr. Morehouse shook his head savagely. "Nonsense," he shouted. confounded nonsense, I tell you. That rule means common pigs, not guinea pigs. Pigs is pigs, Flannery said firmly. Mr. Morehouse bit his lip and then flung his arms out wildly. Very well, he shouted. You shall hear of this. Your president shall hear of this. It is an outrage. I have offered you 50 cents. You refuse it. Keep the pigs until you are ready to take the 50 cents. But by George, sir, if one hair of those pigs' heads is harmed, I will have the law on you. He turned and walked out, slamming the door. Flannery carefully lifted the box from the desk and put it in a corner. Mr. Morehouse quickly wrote a letter to the president of the Transportation Express Company. The president answered, informing Mr. Morehouse that all claims for overcharge should be sent to the Claims Department. Mr. Morehouse wrote to the Claims Department. 1 week later, he received an answer. The Claims Department said it had discussed the matter with the agent at Westcott. The agent said Mr. Morehouse had refused to accept the 2 guinea pigs shipped to him. Therefore, the department said, Mr. Morehouse had no claim against the company and should write to its tariff department. Mr. Morehouse wrote to the tariff department. He stated his case clearly. The head of the tariff department read Mr. Morehouse's letter. Huh, guinea pigs, he said. Probably starved to death by this time. He wrote to the agent asking why the shipment was held up. He also wanted to know if the guinea pigs were still in good health. Before answering, Agent Flannery wanted to make sure his report was up to date. So he went to the back of the office and looked into the cage. Good Lord, there were now 8 of them, all well and eating like hippopotamuses. He went back to the office and explained to the head of the tariff department what the rules said about pigs. And as for the condition of the guinea pigs, said Flannery, they were all well. But there were 8 of them now, all good eaters. The head of the tariff department laughed when he read Flannery's letter. He read it again and became serious. By George, he said, Flannery is right. Pigs is pigs. I'll have to get something official on this. He spoke to the president of the company. The president treated the matter lightly. What is the rate on pigs and on pets? He asked. Pigs, 30 cents. Pets, 25, the head of the tariff department answered. Then, of course, guinea pigs are pigs, the president said. Yes, the head of the tariff department agreed. I look at it that way, too. A thing that can come under 2 rates is naturally to be charged at the higher one. But are guinea pigs pigs? Aren't they rabbits? Come to think of it, the president said, I believe they are more like rabbits, sort of halfway between pig and rabbit. I think the question is this. Are guinea pigs of the domestic pig family? I'll ask Professor Gordon. He is an expert about such things. The president wrote to Professor Gordon. Unfortunately, the professor was in South America, collecting zoological samples. His wife forwarded the letter to him. The professor was in the high Andes Mountains. The letter took many months to reach him. In time, the president forgot the guinea pigs. The head of the tariff department forgot them. Mr. Morehouse forgot them. But Agent Flannery did not. The guinea pigs had increased to 32. He asked the head of the traffic department what he should do with them. "Don't sell the pigs," Agent Flannery was told. "They are not your property. Take care of them until the case is settled." The guinea pigs needed more room. Flannery made a large and airy room for them in the back of his office. Some months later, he discovered he now had 160 of them. He was going out of his mind. Not long after this, the president of the express company heard from Professor Gordon. It was a long and scholarly letter. It pointed out that the guinea pig was the Cavia aporia, while the common pig was the genus Sus of the family Suidae. The president then told the head of the traffic department that guinea pigs are not pigs and must be charged only 25 cents as domestic pets. The traffic department informed Agent Flannery that he should take the 160 guinea pigs to Mr. Morehouse and collect 25 cents for each of them. Agent Flannery wired back, "I've got 800 now. Shall I collect for 800 or what? How about the $64 I paid for cabbages to feed them?" Many letters went back and forth. Flannery was crowded into a few feet at the extreme front of the office. The guinea pigs had all the rest of the room. Time kept moving on as the letters continued to go back and forth. Flannery now had 4,064 guinea pigs. He was beginning to lose control of himself. Then he got a telegram from the company that said, "Error in guinea pig bill. Collect for two guinea pigs 50 cents. Flannery ran all the way to Mr. Morehouse's home, but Mr. Morehouse had moved. Flannery searched for him in town, but without success. He returned to the express office and found that 206 guinea pigs had entered the world since he left the office. At last, he got an urgent telegram from the main office. "Send the pigs to the main office of the company at Franklin." Flannery did so. Soon came another telegram. "Stop sending pigs. Warehouse full." But he kept sending them. Agent Flannery finally got free of the guinea pigs. "Rules may be rules," he said, "but so long as Flannery runs this express office, pigs is pets, and cows is pets, and horses is pets, and lions and tigers and Rocky Mountain goats is pets, and the rate on them is 25 cents. Then he looked around and said cheerfully, "Well, anyhow, it is not as bad as it might have been. What if them guinea pigs had been elephants?"
That's our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.